Okay, everybody, it's Michael E. Cullen II.
And I'm Sesame Incarta from the All Too Real 2 podcast. We're passionate about movies, TV, and pretty much all things pop culture.
Dive into the chaos of failed sitcoms, direct-to-video sequels, and the quirky realms of cinema and TV.
Join us every Thursday for your dose of All Too Real 2 entertainment.
We'll guide you through debates like whether Howard the Duck qualifies as a superhero.
Ponder if Larry the Cable Guy could be the new Rock or Schwarzenegger.
Discover if some shows and movies should have stayed in the cutting room.
Ever heard of a sitcom featuring that dictator with the funny mustache? Well, we watched it.
We're dedicated to unraveling the peculiarities of pop culture, sometimes with awesome guests.
So, if you're into the eccentric world of pop culture,
listen and subscribe to All Too Real 2.
Available wherever you find podcasts
and on Age of Radio.
And ends with this adorable murder scene.
And I was like, okay, so this is going to be a fun comedy.
Curious to see how this goes.
You have 9 months to get overweight and look like you rolled out of a dumpster.
I want to eat something alive.
They're garbage people because they made a decision to do garbage, terrible things.
Hello, and welcome to Movie
Smash!
Hello and welcome to Movie Smash, the show where we dive headfirst into comic book movies outside the MCU. If you're new to the show, thanks for joining us. If you've been here before, you know the drill. Each episode, we're going to smash a movie whose source material is from a graphic novel or a comic. Is it worth revisiting? Should it be forgotten? Let's find out. This is Movie Smash. I'm one of your hosts, Chris Roberts. I'm the founder of All Panel Creations. With me today, I have Fergal Amayo.
Fergal Amayo, owner of Gotham Knight Comics, where we believe that your nerd is the way. We want you to get that nerd on through our ability to give you the best and most amazing experience and, quite frankly, tell those stories in comics. And I am interested to see what happens when we imprison ourselves in our minds.
And our guest host today is Ryan Estrada.
Hi, I am Ryan. I make comics myself, and hopefully one day I'll have a movie of my comics that you'll be talking about on the show. But I make many, many things, including the Eisner-nominated graphic novel Banned Book Club, the new book, No Rules Tonight, and the Student Ambassador series. I also am coming to you from Busan, South Korea, not too far from where our boy Odesu ate that octopus.
Is there a train coming from Busan, by the way, just out of curiosity? Any zombies coming into Busan?
Well, to be clear, in the movie Train to Busan, Busan was the safe zone, so we're good.
That's good.
Our movie today is 2003's Old Boy, starring, and I am going to just be butchering names today. Ryan, correct me if you have a better pronunciation for them. I assume you do. Garan.
You want me to say it first? Well, Taemin Sheik is the lead actor.
Struck by
Park Chan-wook. Park Chan-wook.
Odaisu. Long time no see. Imprisoned for 15 years. Losing your wife and child. Seeking revenge is the greatest cure for someone who got hurt. What happens after you've revenged yourself? What will you do?
I can't end it like that.
You actually picked this movie for us. Why did you pick Old Boy?
Yeah, well, I mean, I live here in South Korea, and I have, like I said, I live near where they shot large portions of the film. And, you know, I love Korean cinema. When I came here, it was like discovering a whole new history of film, that there's so many amazing films made here. For a lot of people, Old Boy is the movie that they know. It's like people think this is the best Korean movie. It's not the best Korean movie. It's not even the best Korean vengeance movie. It's not even the best Park Chan-wook movie. That's JSA. And it's not even the best movie in its own trilogy. That's Lady Vengeance. It is a movie that's very important to the history of Korean film. It influenced a lot of films to come after it. And it's what a lot of people know about. And of course, it is based on a comic book. Although, I don't want to break the format of your show. Technically, Old Boy is the only comic book movie that exists within the MCU. When The Winter Soldier came out, there's a scene at the beginning where Cap looks at makes a list of things that he needs to catch up on after he's been imprisoned in ICE.
I do remember
it was different for every country. They would put local things. Of course, nobody knew that when watching the movie for the first time. So in South Korea, the movie that he needed to catch up on was Old Boy. And so this movie does exist within the MCU, but that actually made it a horror movie in Korea, because not knowing that was just to pander to the locals, I saw that and I'm like, they're making a big deal about the fact he hasn't seen Old Boy. And then there's him becoming romantically interested in Carter. And I'm like, oh no, oh no. Are they setting up something where he doesn't know that this is the daughter of the woman he used to date? That was not what they were doing. But I was terrified the whole film.
That would be an interesting twist for the MCU. I don't think they would ever go there. Speaking of the manga, are either of you familiar with that original manga or have you read it? Because I haven't.
So I'm not, as you all know, and hopefully our audience knows me by now, I'm not a big manga guy. I've read some manga, and you know, and obviously I'm an Akira fan. There are certain stories that I do enjoy, and they're like Dragon Ball and different things like that. But no, I had not read that. I'm familiar with the artist. I know he's had some good work and he's done phenomenally well. And this book was nominated for an Eisner. I do track those. That's why, congratulations, Ryan. Those are hard things to get. And to be at that kind of the pinnacle of the of your genre, so that's phenomenal. But no, I hadn't read the book up until this point.
Now, I have the first volume. I decided to start reading it. I read the first volume. I decided I was going to try and read through it all. And through the first volume, it's 210 pages, 10 chapters, and it covers about 10 minutes of the movie. I'm like, this is way too slow. I don't know if I can read this whole thing. Like, it's very, very slow. But what's wild is what I read in the first volume is like exactly like the movie, like beat for beat, like a specific 10-minute stretch of the movie. Although from what I understand, I mean, it just again stretched out much, much longer. But from what I understand, after that, toward the end, it's completely different. Basically, anything you remember from the movie, all the memorable moments, all the memorable plot twists, do not come from the movie. They come from Park Chan-wook's weird mind. So I've started it and read volume one.
There are 79 chapters in that. 79 chapters over 8 collected series, if I'm not over 8 collected volumes. It's a long series.
Yeah, I read that too. This movie is essentially almost lifted directly from the manga, except for the big twist that everyone remembers. That was added after the fact. That was not part of the actual manga. But beyond that, I don't know much about it. So was this your, obviously, Ryan, this is probably not your first viewing, but Fergal, was this your first viewing of this movie?
So, no, it's my first time seeing the Korean version of this story, but I did see the Josh Brolin story, so the Old Boy 2013 remake. Interesting movie, but I'm going to tell you, like, I can see why that movie, the first one I saw didn't really make sense, and I can see why this movie was, you know, I'm not a subtitle guy. I don't do a lot of subtitle movies just because time is fast, and sometimes I just don't want to read a movie. I want to see a movie. This movie is one of those rare, interesting movies where his like facial expressions, I could like not read it and still figure out this guy is just. It was surprisingly good.
I first moved to Korea in 2002, so I saw this movie when it came out when I was kind of discovering Korean cinema, and yeah, it was a big inflection point for like I said, it changed Korean cinema in that it did so well overseas that everyone's like, well, I guess vengeance movies is what we do now. It became like what superhero movies are in America, where it's like, now we have to all make vengeance movies. And like you mentioned that the manga was more violent. Manga is actually a lot less violent. Nobody dies until the end in the manga, and there's a lot less violence. Park Chan-wook really just wanted to dig into vengeance and how messy it gets. And that's why he made it so extreme. And that was kind of, you know, not that it hadn't been done before, but it was kind of such a big thing in Korea that it completely changed how people made movies.
And I can see why. It's crazy ass movie. It's just completely crazy how they pulled this thing together.
It kind of reminds me of the Japanese horror movie craze that we had for a while, where they just, one did really well in the States and then they started pumping out a ton of them. This is the first time I saw this movie. I saw it first thing this morning, actually, to get ready for the show. And I've had friends telling me for a while now, you need to see this movie. So I came into it with it, the hype level being through the roof.
So when you saw the movie, were you disappointed? Were you hyped up? Did it catch you? Was it like the Lions on a 47-9 victory over the Cowboys? What was it? Did it meet your expectations?
We will get to that, and I'll save it for that part. Before we jump into it, Fergal, do you have any sort of history of the manga itself for us?
Well, it was originally ran. I'm going to butcher a name, Garan Tsuchiya. And again, if I butcher it, and then Nobuko Minegishi was the illustrator. It really was a dark horse run from 96 to 98. It's the original run, 8 volumes, and it won an Eisner Award. It's really well loved manga. It's one of the The creator is done several other books beyond this, but this was one of his kind of like everybody has that big one book. And I think this really was one of his big young books because it was remade, not just American, but there's an unauthorized Hindi remake of this movie as well.
So if this is your first time joining us, just a heads up, we'll be discussing the plot of this 20-year-old movie. And with that, discuss certain elements of the story that might be considered spoilers, especially the end, and consider yourself warned. So, Ryan, can you walk us through the story of this movie a little bit? Can you tell us sort of what happens?
Curious to see how this goes.
So this is a story of Oday Su, a drunken man who wakes up in a hotel room that he cannot get out of and finds himself locked up for 10 years and then suddenly released. And he has to investigate who locked him up, why they locked him up, and why they let him out. And that investigation takes him to some dark, weird places where he discovers some things he does not want to know.
That's a pretty good sense of what it was. It took me a while to figure out the whole movie was about. It's funny you said 10 years, so maybe that's a translation problem, because in the movie they kept saying 15.
I might be confusing it with the book.
Well, I thought the American, so this is where it gets a little confusing. The old boy of 2013 is 20 years. So in this one, they reference 15 years because the inflection for him happened at year 11.
Yeah, it's 15 here because his daughter was 3 years old when he went into the prison. So when he comes out, she's 18. So let me jump in. We've sort of hit some of the characters here. Why don't we start with, was it Daishay U?
Oday Su, which is a, yeah, Oday Su is a reference to Odysseus from the Odyssey.
No, it's not Odysseus. It was the guy who marries his mother.
Oedipus?
Oedipus, that's who it is. I think it's a play on Oedipus.
Interesting.
Nonetheless, how do you feel as a character, as an actor, how he portrayed that role?
I thought he was brilliant. I actually, this is one of these, like, again, I because it was a written movie, sort of like when Ryan, we did Cemetery Man. Well, Cemetery Man, you couldn't turn away because it was so, like, they didn't shoot any two movie to make sense. Not each scene did not make sense after the other. And so you had to kind of follow along. You were just completely lost. This movie is, you know, it's that written word all the way through, probably not in South Korea, but in here it is. And it was, you know, I was mad impressed with how he portrayed all of that dynamic kind of crazy through how he became monster and vengeance. It was good. He was good. I say it was probably better than the remake that was America. I'm definitely going to say that.
Yeah. Chaemin Chik is an amazing actor. He's a big star here. And the way he embodied this character, it's wild to start a character with it, like start a movie with your main character being such a irredeemable dick, like just such a jerk. And then you're like, oh, well, he's going to learn a lesson and get better. And no, he's going to get so much worse in every way. But he is able to still make this character someone that you want to follow. And the way the character is introduced and styled is interesting, too, because he looks like absolute garbage. Like if you look at the manga, there's a whole plot line about how since he was locked up, he decided he'd do nothing but exercise and get into shape. And he comes out looking really ripped and hot. Whereas in the movie, he just looks like he rolled out of a dumpster. And that also really influenced Korean cinema going forward, because nowadays it's like you look at an American movie and they're like, oh, I just cast a big movie. I'm going to spend like, you know, 9 months getting super into shape and ripped. And then you see them between movies like with a big dad bod and like scruffy hair. Where in Korea, it's the opposite, where it's like I just got out of the Busan Film Festival. I meet all these actors. I've met Chaemin Chik. I've met the director of the film. I've met Song Kang-ho, all these actors. And they are all like the most beautiful people on earth. And every time they're cast in a movie, the director's like, you have 9 months to get overweight and look like you rolled out of a dumpster because we want you to look like absolute garbage.
It gave him the John Wick strength. That was interesting because I read some information about how that guy, and I don't even want to try to slaughter his name, Chaemin Suk, when he did all of his own stunts, a majority of his own stunts, and there was very little CGI or other influence added to this movie, maybe the ants, a few other very minor things, the knife, and a lot of that. So it's sort of like that believable superhero guy. He's powered so much by vengeance and anger, because remember, he was in that room, and there was a lot of dudes. He took out a lot of dudes, and you know, stuff should have took him down. And he kept going, so that was powered by strength, but just not, you know, Chris Evans or Thor. You know, Chris Evans or you know one of these other guys. Another Chris Hemsworth strength. It was like John Wick strength, not huge, but you wouldn't want to screw with him.
in Korean cinema, there's a thing about, I love the fight scenes in Korean movies because they're not choreographed in the way that they would choreograph in America. In America, they choreograph these fight scenes like dances, and they're doing very distinct movements with a lot of training. In Korean movies, they really try and make it look like this is what an out of shape middle-aged dude would do if he needed to fight. There's a lot, you know, in that famous hammer scene, he's running through swinging a hammer. He's not doing like amazing moves. And that kind of, in other movies, you see people like fall on their butts in the middle of the fight because they're just so mad. Like it just, it always feels so real. And that's what makes that hammer scene so powerful, is that he's not doing like with John Wick, like with stunt, like you're not having like these trained stunts. He's just, there's a lot of people. I have a hammer. I'm going to swing it until there are no more people.
It's interesting too. I went to this movie blind, had no idea what it was about other than that there were some very good scenes. Everyone loved this movie, went in blind. And when that character first comes out, he's being arrested for being drunk disorderly. And it's a very funny set of scenes. Supposedly he ad-libbed all of that, and it was the last thing they shot. So they were just being silly. And I was like, okay, so this is going to be a fun comedy. Like, they're going to have some fun with this. So I have no idea where this is going. Then later on, yeah, he gets to be this very grisly fighter. And you kind of talk about that hammer scene. And even that part, I knew there was some big fight scene. And that defeat went against my expectations, too. Because I was expecting the sort of like choreographed, sort of gung-fu, you know, John Wick sort of scene. And no, I get a guy swinging a hammer like I would probably do it, trying to say, you know, just survive that hallway of death. And there's a part where he like collapses because he's so tired. He stands back up again, gets a little bit extra energy. He's got a knife in his back at one point.
That's what I'm talking about.
And we did Atomic Blonde recently, and we had a Lori on who is she used to be in stunts, and she was saying how she always enjoys movies where somebody is, you know, demonstrating fighting how they would do it, like how a woman would fight. No. This is how a middle-aged dude who's been stuck in a room for 15 years would fight. I do like the fact that he says in there, like, I hope my fighting skills live up to my imagination, because he's practicing in his room against the wall for, you know, several years.
And then he says, they do. I love that.
Or when he fights those guys in the at the initial part, when he first gets out and he's like laying, you know, he's trying to get a cigarette from them or something, and they sort of push him back and he just lays on the ground a little bit, trying to wonder, should I even get back up again?
That dude is, I mean, it's like I said, he kicked a lot of ass in this movie. I mean, but at the end of the day, he was also so incredibly tortured. I think it was a de-evolution, because you say he was such a beautiful actor when you see him at the Busan Film Festival. Well, the thing that I think then that only clearly exemplifies that they did such a good job, he did such a good job changing his entire face and facial structure going from when he first went into that prison to when he got released 15 years later. Did not look like the same dude, and they were very clear about that. Every action he took did not feel like the same dude that went in there. And he was just, I think that's why he had that hypnotism. I don't know, I might give it away a thing, but I think that's some of the stuff he had at the end because of that craziness.
And apparently he is still upset about the way they styled him in that movie, because he still talks about how traumatic it was when they like permed his hair to look like that. And he's like, why do you want me to look like garbage? Come on, I'm the star of the movie.
He even has a line where he's like, a thought goes in his head and he says, like, I hate my haircut. And which you can't see the hair at that point until they zoom out and you're like, yeah, I would hate that haircut too. It's pretty bad. He is a very scruffy person, but his antagonist, the villain of the movie is Wu Jin Lee. Am I getting that right? And he is the exact opposite. That man is well-dressed, well-groomed, very sharp. And it's an interesting sort of dichotomy between those two people. What do you think of that character, the villain of the story?
I find that character fascinating because of the joy that he has in what he's doing. Usually that type of character, you'd see him being like sinister and scheming. Not that he's not sinister and scheming, but like if you think of that scene where he hands him the purple box and is shining the little light on it, like this big grin he has and he's giggling like a two-year-old that's about to get like a cake. He's such a weird character, and he's doing such cruel, awful things, but he's so excited and proud of himself for the way he did it. And it adds this weird levity to what he's doing, because it's just, you feel like it's a little kid. Like eventually, like he starts out so mysterious, and when you find out more about him, he's just giddy with excitement about the awful, awful things that he's done.
Yeah, that dude is, I mean, so the bad guy, the bad guy in this movie, you know, not what I expected. I guess I'll say that because I did see the 2013 remake, and I kind of, in my mind, I envisioned a guy similar to the first experience with this movie, and he was not that guy. Completely just, I mean, he's very cruel, very smart, sort of played a lot of pulls, and you were just trying to figure out, you know, we might have figured out some of the things that are going on, but they threw enough twists in that it took a while for me, at least, to kind of figure out the overall end game in this scenario.
I'm glad you said that, too. I was kind of like trying to figure out what was felt different about the movie. And the movie, typically, you kind of expect it to be bad guy, good guy. They're going at it. But for the villain of the story, it's a vengeance story for him as well. It's basically both people are putting vengeance upon one another. And we don't really know where they kind of mention where it starts. But and we don't know that at the beginning of the movie. We don't learn that till the last quarter of the movie, the last tenth of the movie, that the level of vengeance he's coming from. And it's not as big as you think it would be. I mean, it's the steps he goes through to make the main character's life miserable is just astounding, the things he does just to get to that point. And at the end of it, you're right. You can see the joy on his face as his lifetime's worth of work. He's been doing this for 15 years. It's a plan that it's like, imagine building something like a company or a story or whatever. And you're getting to the culmination of that point. And he has just got this grin on his face.
Picture when he lays down on the bed, the picture of the video or the picture, that sort of just in a single scene kind of summarizes the issue that how much depth of obsession this guy has with this.
Oh yeah. And he's petty and he's enjoying it. And it's 15 years of him working to get to this point. It's his life's mission. And you kind of wonder, like, where does he have the money to do this? Like, what is his day job? It's not this.
I think he worked in cameras. I think he worked in technology, cell phone cameras. That was his thing. He had that all over his place. I think they kind of hinted the amount of money he had to have done or sold some technology of some kind.
And the interesting thing about the original comic, like we said, the twist was created for the movie. But what the twist was in the original comic is that it was basically nothing. Like the main character just saw him at a lonely moment and that like kind of destroyed him, like, cause he's afraid of showing emotion. And so people say it was disappointing cause it, you know, there's that this big mystery, it's nothing. But I think that's an interesting twist to show that the lengths people will go to for something that like is completely one-sided. This guy has no memory of this moment, but it's consumed him. I think adding what really happened in this movie that really did affect his life is a fascinating thing. But it also, once again, Odesu does not remember it. So it's kind of showing what an impact you can have on someone's life without remembering, because it's so powerful to them.
Did he take that away or did he just not remember it? Because that I didn't get from the movie. That school scene where they discover it, was that just taken away? Or was there like forced hypnosis, forced removal of that memory?
It's actually stated in the movie. He asks and he says, I didn't take that from you. You just forgot.
I must have missed that.
It's during the villain's epilogue, you know, his not his epilogue, but his big monologue. He's giving a sort of building up to the story of what's all happened and why we're all here. And he says in there, you just forgot. I didn't take that from you. I didn't hypnotize that away from you. You just forgot. And it's funny. It's a lesson I try to teach my kids all the time, that you never know. You might be the villain of someone else's story because you don't remember every moment of your life. And he did this small infraction, which he told his friend a secret and told his friend not to say anything. And his friend goes and blabs the secret to everybody. And this guy, that the villain, goes to the source of the rumor. And that's our hero, if you want to call him a hero, and says, now you got to be punished.
You know, I would tell you there's another lesson in this. If you've seen Adam Sandler, Billy Madison, call the people you've wronged. Just going to leave it out there. Let that float. If you've ever seen Billy Madison with Adam Sandler, call the people you've wronged because it can benefit you in the end.
How do you feel about the character Midu?
I don't know. A little bit whiny, but she's definitely believable, but just a teeny bit whiny through the whole thing. At first, she seems cool, but she gets whiny.
So I think, Park Chan-wook himself, like, really regretted the way he treated that character, and he spent decades after making films about women with agency because he had this character that had no agency. Even the way we see her acting at the beginning is all because of this this training and manipulation and hypnosis that she's gone through. So she has no power over the decisions she's making, and she has no agency in the end because she needs to know is kept from her. So it must have been a difficult character to play, because at no point does she have all the information or have any agency to make her own decisions.
Now, I agree with you on that one. There are many times at the beginning of the movie, too, of course, you find out the secret of the movie. I'm watching saying, like, why is she following him? Why is she going along with this? Why is she doing any of this? He's a stranger who came into her restaurant and he came and ate octopus. Why is this a thing? And she eventually, like, I was like, is she his Robin now in the story? Is there a scene I didn't see where he explains everything that's happened and she's like, I'm buying into this, I'm going to help you? Things just happen with her. Once you know the twist, once you know she was manipulated into this position with the same hypnosis that he was affected by, then it's like, okay, she has no willpower. But yeah, she has no, which means she has no agency. But it's good to hear he went out and made movies after that to sort of redeem other female characters, because she was flat, like, as in, like, she was very two-dimensional.
I didn't actually know that was done intentionally, quite frankly. So that's even more surprising. But I'm glad that he did go around and try to create powerful women characters. That's always a positive. But yeah, I mean, it's you know, there was a lot that could have been done with that. I think that they, again, the 2013 was kind of similar in the fact that it was still a bit of a two-dimensional character, a two-dimensional representation. And that's what stood in contrast to the main character, which is why that, because that other guy was flipping out, just absolutely flipping out.
And to be clear, the female characters created later are still like garbage people, like most people in his movies. It's not like he made like amazing, but it's like they're garbage people because they made a decision to do garbage, terrible things and hurt people.
Hey, as long as they make the decision themselves.
Yes. As I'm saying, watch Adam Sandler's Billy Madison.
There is a character I do think is, I would really want to touch on, is, was his name. I'm looking it up real fast. Mr. Han. He's the white haired dude, the bodyguard. He was a sort of silent force, and I felt that silent force throughout the movie, and he did not disappoint at the end of it.
He kicks some ass. I didn't realize he was that much of an ass kicker.
His end moment where he has that powerful moment, he looks like, basically seems like the Terminator, and the way he can dispatch this guy and then do the turn around and find out that Odesu won that fight anyway. And the look on his face, like, wait, that's not allowed to happen. I don't lose. What? How?
Yeah, total shock. Now, there are some famous scenes in this movie. We might as well get the biggest one out of the way and talk about that. And then we'll go into some other ones. The hallway scene, that is, or the hammer scene.
Shot in one continuous take over 17 days, but shot as one continuous take.
Yeah, and it's funny how, like, the hallway scene has become like a genre in itself now, not just in Korean cinema, but in American cinema. There's, you know, every season of Daredevil is like, what's our new hallway fight? Like, so many movies have tried to recreate that.
Absolutely. Umbak, whatever is Umbak, Tony Jaa. I mean, they do these hallway scenes phenomenal now. They just keep going. I mean, that's all, most of them, that's how you show close-up fighting.
The one I saw, which it reminded me of the, because we just did Atomic Blonde. There's that one scene on Atomic Blonde where they're fighting up a stairwell into a final scene as well. So I think this movie, that one-shot fight scene has lended itself to, people have stolen that idea and taken it to other directions. It was not what I was expecting. Like I said, it was hyped up to me to be this massive fight, and I was expecting some sort of like John Wick style fight. Not that this was bad, don't get me wrong, but I was expecting more of that, and I was happy with what I got, because it was more personal of a fight, it felt like, just because he was just getting up and close, hitting people with a hammer, getting stabbed in the back. He gave up at one point, jumps back up, and keeps fighting as he goes along, especially when he sees those guys in the elevator when they open up at the end.
And I think what makes this one so powerful, like all these ones that have come in the wake of it, are doing that, like I said, super choreographed, like, this has to happen here, this has to happen here, this camera movement has to happen here, and everyone looks like they're trained by a stunt coordinator. Whereas in this one, some of the guys he's fighting, the reason he's able to defeat them is because they're like, I don't want to fight this dude with a hammer. Like, they're just standing back. Like when he's catching his breath, they're not after him. They're like, are we getting paid enough for this? Like, why are we fighting? And he's like, I don't care. You're still in the way. I'm still going to hit you with a hammer. It just feels messy. And I like when movies let their fights feel messy like that.
Yeah, there was that larger, sort of plumpier guy who like leans into him, goes forward, steps back, goes forward. He's like, do I really want to do this? Because I don't want to get a hammer to the face. And speaking of the hammer, there was that scene that happened right before that where he becomes a dentist for a scene. Let's put it that way. That scene occurred. I'm like, oh, we're going there. That's how dark and gritty, gory this movie's going to go.
I could tell that by the amount of times he attempted to commit suicide by inking into his hands and breaking his own hand on the wall. Like, over time, he just became a ferocious animal. So when he got out and you saw him just kind of like not even flinching when the guy fell off the building or anything. You kind of knew that shit was going to get real. It was about to go down. And he took care of that business, right? Wow. That was something else. And like I said, it just shows that, you know, you don't have to be massive muscly to be effective.
So I do want to talk about this, just for a little thing, the octopus eating scene. Fergal, how did you feel about when you saw that man eating an octopus?
That was also something that I believe he requested, if I'm not mistaken, for this. He wanted a live octopus for this thing. And it's because it has little veins that make it live after its head gets popped out. It's a little much. It's a little much. I'm not going to lie. It's a little much. It's not my personal cup of tea, but I can see the visual effect for the movie. What an actor. He took one for the team.
He ate 4 live octopuses to pull that scene off. Those are all real. Ugh.
I'm a vegetarian, so it's not something I love watching, but it's a powerful moment in the film. And it was terrible for Taemin Schick also, because he said he had to like pray before each one and apologize to the octopus. He's like, I gotta do it, I'm sorry. It really shows how feral this man is.
Yeah, he is the monster at that point. He just, I want to eat something alive.
Say, people do eat octopus here. Like that restaurant, you can order an octopus, but like you said, they chop the head off and the tentacles are still wiggling. So that's just taking something that you can see in everyday life in Korea and taking it to the next step where it's like, oh, we didn't even chop the tentacles off. This is the whole octopus.
I am vehemently raising my hands this way. I just had to come off camera this day. That's no go. I'm very freeing in my food, but at some point I've got to have a line. Like things that are living, I don't know. It just feels that and those ox balls. I don't know if I could do those.
What, mountain oysters?
Mountain oysters, yeah. Those two things. I think I'd have to live octopus and mountain oysters.
What other scenes stood out to you guys?
When he tried to attack her in the bathroom. Like that was surprising. I was not, it felt like I wasn't sure where that was coming from, but he just, like, he went at her, and then he thought he wasn't worthy and kind of left. That was weird. That was just a little weird.
Yeah, it really shows how monstrous he's become, because he didn't have to do that. She was extremely interested in him, but he still felt the need to pursue her non-consensually, which really made us hate this character. And it's a strange thing how much this movie wants us to hate.
Yeah, because before that, you feel sorry for this guy. He's been in prison for 15 years that he doesn't know why, and he's in there. And then he comes out and he does this. He attacks her, and he doesn't have to. He doesn't need to. Their whole relationship was really messed up, even without the twist at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Well, and I don't think we can give away the twist, because I think this movie's like Tenet. You got to see it all the way through to get. If you're investing, even if you're investing the 2 hours, the payoff is definitely worth it at the end. It's a screwed up movie. And it doesn't let that go through the entire film.
No, I think we can give it away, because if they haven't seen it by this point, they're probably not going to. It's been 20 plus years.
I'm gonna be the big reveal to get his mind wiped so he can be with his daughter as his lover. That's odd. That's definitely different. It's interesting to me that he chose to kill that side.
Well, I think the twist is more that what happened was for our listeners that have not seen this movie, is that when the villain and the hero, because I will mess up their names, so I'm trying not to. When they were kids, they went to high school together, and they're called old boys when they graduate. So they both went to high school together, and the villain was having an inappropriate relationship with his sister. And this rumor started getting around, and then she kills herself. And that's what the vengeance is about. He wants to kill the hero because of his rumor, his sister committed suicide. Now, to his revenge, he made him go through something just as bad, if not worse. He wipes his mind, makes him forget who his family is, and then he ends up, the reason why it's 15 years is so his 4-year-old daughter is now 19, and then they both are hypnotized so that the hero ends up seducing his own daughter. So that's what the vengeance really is about, and basically they both go crazy because of it.
I mean, you're very succinct in that, but it's the way both sides played off each other that made this movie cruel. It was the way that every single particular area that this guy was going, where he thinking he's one step ahead, was meticulously planned for. And the way the way each one of these setbacks just drove him over the edge. It all drove him over to the very end when he cut his own tongue out. Like he literally cut his own tongue out. It just drove him to the edge. And it's how he did that, even though he won. He beat the badass dude. He could kill the guy. But he was, in the end, begging to make sure that she didn't know that she had sex with her father.
The other unique thing about this film is that this genre of vengeance films, the point of it always is that the vengeance was never worth it. It just makes things worse, and every single character ends in a worse place than where they started. But this is the only film where the two characters are such pieces of garbage that they end with exactly what they wanted and end smiling. I wouldn't say they end happily, but they end smiling. The villain does exactly the horrible thing he wanted and ends grinning happily about it. And then Odesu ends up removing the memory that this was his daughter from his mind so that he can date her. He has that creepy smile at the end where you don't know if he's about to laugh or cry, which is what Park Chan-wook asked him to do. He's become such, he's a monster at the beginning. Through all these things he's gone through, he's become such a garbage human that that's a happy ending for him.
Both people get their vengeance and both people lose.
Yeah.
Or do they? I mean, so did they, because it seems like to Ryan's point, it does seem like neither of them lost. Like it seems ultimately at the very end of the game, either one got exactly what had been planned. Maybe one guy didn't know it and one guy did, but they both got exactly where it was, like they were careening towards one another.
I think the thing is that it's an ending that any of us, any reasonable person would find to be losing. They are so broken by everything that's happened that they're like, I'm cool with that. That's exactly what I wanted. Great. And that is even more disturbing and gross than if they had been sad about it.
Yeah, it's sort of they both won their battles, but they both lost the war of salvation. They are both doomed these existences. Well, one gets a doomed existence, the other one is dead.
That's what made the movie really good. That's why this movie, I can see why it picked up what it picked up, because it made like $18 million in South Korea. It was like the fifth highest growing movie. It was a third highest. It was really a big movie. And it came out rushing. And to your point, Ryan, it changed a lot of things. A lot of stuff got, you know, Korean movies got picked up over here, and it picked up like The Raid and other films of that, Train to Busan. Certain things have already, and they continue to come out over here. That just tells you the power of what that's doing over there. So, you know, it's a damn good movie. I mean, I'm not a subtitle guy, and I was quite impressed with this movie.
When the villain is monologuing about why he did this, the backstory, sort of laying all the cards on the table, did either of you guys see the final twist of what he convinced him to the hero to do?
As soon as I figured out that she was like, as soon as he opened the book, you know, during the movie, it crossed my mind because they kept crossing boundaries. So I was like, this could be what they're leading up to, which would be gross. And then they showed the example between the brother and sister, and I'm like, yeah, this is on the table. But what the effect, and that's the director, I think, is that the effect when he opens the box, that's when it really starts becoming apparent what's about to happen.
I think it's very rare for anyone in the English-speaking world to have seen this movie without knowing the twist in advance. Because like, even though I saw it when it came out, I had to wait until it came out with Korean subtitles on DVD. It's one of those twists that everyone immediately spoils and talks about. I'm pretty sure I knew the twist before I ever saw the film. And that happens with a lot of people.
I did not know the twist before I saw this movie. And that was disturbing.
Yeah. And you know what's interesting? I'm just going to say it outright because I think this is where the two movies diverge, probably due to Spike Lee. In the end of the 2013 Old Boy, he got the diamonds. It's still the same storyline. But instead, he ends up giving the diamonds to his daughter, begging them to make sure that they never know, kills the guy. That's all still happens, suicide. But he ends up giving the vast majority of the diamonds, and he goes back to the guy with the prison, which is Samuel Jackson, to ask to be put back in the prison with the rest of the diamonds. Not get out of the hotel room again. Just stay in there till he dies.
Now, the final scene of the movie is an epilogue, essentially. Snowy background, so it's months later. I think they filmed it actually in New Zealand. He goes in and he's basically asking the person who hypnotized him to remove the memory that it's his daughter, to get rid of that piece of the memory. And she says, the monster will walk away. You'll be split into two people, the monster and you. And the monster will walk away. And for every step it takes, it ages a year. And eventually it hits 70, it dies. And then the daughter shows up and he's sitting with her. She has no idea because, of course, she never opened that box. And now we're looking at this guy. Is he the monster or is he our hero?
The laughter was the thing that made you think about that when the movie ended, because he went from like laughing to almost like something didn't fully take on that, whatever that was.
Yeah, I think it feels like he has gone through this process to give himself plausible deniability that he doesn't know anymore, but even if there's some surface level where this magical hypnotism that doesn't exist in the real world has like made him able to forget it, like he knows deep down that this has happened, but he is broken enough that he's going to allow himself to pretend like he's forgotten.
Yeah. And I think he is the monster. Remember that they said, someone, who'd you walk here with? And they follow the footsteps back to it. So he walked from that spot to where they meet up as the monster, because he was supposed to stand still. The monster was the one that walks away. And that's who she meets up with, is the monster. So I kind of think that he is, I think you're just right. He has a plausible deniability. He wants this, I don't want to say happy life, because it's just gross and disgusting, but the life he wants, I guess. This movie takes just about 2 hours. Did it move fast? Did it move slow?
It moved fast. It didn't set itself. I mean, there's always points you can always kind of, once you start getting the arc of the movie, there's always a couple scenes here and there where you can move forward. But this movie moves pretty good. Again, I wanted to give this one a little attention because it did take my attention. It was actually not horrible. So I was like, okay, let's see where this is going. So moved decently fast. But I mean, it's an older movie, so that can also wear on the eye a little bit. I'm kind of spoiled in my HD world.
Yeah, like I said, compared to the manga, it's a rocket. Like, even when you're at the beginning, when you're showing the idea of monotony, that a lot of people show by making the film monotonous, this actually just fired through with interesting shots and interesting editing to show the monotony of his life locked up while still having a propulsive rhythm.
For me, it felt a little slow. But that's because I think because I did not know the twist and where it was going to go. And I went in with the expectations of an action movie, sort of vengeance action movie. And I wasn't getting that right away. It was a long build up to get there. So that was just beat me and my expectations around it from what I had heard about the movie.
Damn you, Chris, and those expectations.
I know. That's all I have sometimes. Now, knowing what the movie was, I think the pacing was important to it. Because I think you're right. Like, it's, they wanted you to feel what it was like in that prison. The fact that it was slow, the fact that it was monotonous. I do like the fact that when he's punching the wall, and he's drawn a picture of there of a man that he's just beating up.
Yeah, and the painting behind him that ages, he references that a couple times. That shot was not misused. That kept going back to the painting with the statement on that, do I not have a right to live if I'm a beast? That's an interesting, because that painting keeps getting like a Dorian Gray picture.
So what did you guys love about this movie? What do you think they could have done better?
It's an older movie, so let's remake a little bit of it. I think that's what they need to do, get a little cleaner with some of the stuff they've got going on today. But I think they did, for a subtitle movie, it was one of the best, most intense, like carry the performance on your face movies I think I've ever seen.
For me, I think I love the tonal variety of it, because people talk about how dark and disturbing this movie is. And so many movies that have come in the wake of that try to recreate it, but they just make everything dark. The colors are dark, the personalities are dark, and they're just so punishing. But this one, there's actually a lot of bright colors. There's a lot of like dark humor. There's a lot of gleeful moments that like buried within this thing, which that balance kind of makes it more disturbing and kind of easier to watch, even though it gets really dark. So I love that it did a lot of different things. The one thing that never sat right with me that, again, I don't disrespect, but it's not something I like, is that ending we're talking about with the hypnotist. It feels so out of place. First of all, because we've never met that character before, and we're having this powerful moment with a character we've never met, who's been, obviously been involved in the story through the villain. But we've never met this character, and it's this, again, even though we've been talking about hypnotism, it makes it feel like this magical bit at the end. I like, not that I like the remake, but I like the idea that it ends with the prison, because those are characters that we know that we've gone through an arc with, and that can end, the solution can involve them. As much as I dislike the decision he made and don't like watching it, it does say a lot about the character. So I'm not saying it's wrong. I just don't particularly like watching the epilogue.
I'm glad you said that, because for me, the epilogue in particular was where I saw some problems, because I thought maybe it's like a cultural thing I wasn't aware of. Like, maybe in Korean culture, there is a sort of mystic woman who can do this kind of thing, and she's supposed to be an analog for that. And I was like, maybe that's what it is. I mean, she felt really sort of we see her in one scene early on when she says, "Turn your head, you'll be in a green field." And he wakes up in a suitcase, and all of a sudden she's back again. How did he find her? Now, how does this actually work? She's like, "Look at a tree, it'll become concrete, and now all of a sudden you're two people." That's pretty hard. That's a pretty big pill to swallow.
Well, it's implied too, because remember, this entire movie has to swallow some big pills. You're telling me so much of this guy's experience has been hypnotized. He's been hit with drugs and different things. It could be this fantastical woman that we know is on his payroll. So she might be, she might be the lady with the power, the soup du jour, if you will.
Or she doesn't exist at all. We don't know.
I think the movie would have been a lot more powerful if hypnosis had never been involved, because, you know, like you mentioned, like he didn't forget his family. He just, they made him believe his daughter was adopted in another country. That's all you need to do. And I think it would have been more interesting to have psychological manipulation, have them do what they did, rather than magical realism, hypnotism story. Like it, I think there would have been ways to do it that would have been more interesting than being like a wizard did it.
Now, you mentioned, Ryan, that this is actually part of a trilogy. Have you seen any of those movies?
Of course. So it's not a trilogy that like characters go through, but basically what happened is that he made a film called Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance, and then he was approached about making Old Boy, and a reporter was like, "Didn't you just make a movie about vengeance?" So rather than like admit to like, he basically just said, "So what? Maybe I'll make a third one. I'll make it a trilogy." And so he did, and he made Lady Vengeance. Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance is a very dark film about a child kidnapping some well-meaning, they kidnapped the child, but they thought they were doing something good, and the child died, and it becomes a vengeance story. Lady Vengeance is a lot more like Old Boy in that has a lot of dark humor in it, and ends with this adorable murder scene that's just so Korean. It feels like if you've ever been to a Korean party where like people like take turns cleaning up, and like it's just such an adorable murder. That's my favorite one in the trilogy. It's him trying to say everything he has to say about vengeance and why it's not necessarily gonna make things better.
Kind of reminds me of the concept of, was it the Cornetto trilogy?
Cornetto, yeah.
It's like Shaun of the Dead. What were the other ones that were in there? Hot Fuzz. And there's one about the bar at the end of the world. World's End, thank you.
World's End, probably one of the greatest movies. That, I mean, every one of those movies you just named are absolutely phenomenal. That's one of the reasons I still can tune into a Simon Pegg story because of those movies.
Fergal, you alluded to this earlier. There is actually a Bollywood knockoff of this movie called Zindi. Do either of you want to see this movie?
Well, I did just see the Indian Spider-Man, so I think I'm probably going to put myself into that one. And it's amazing, just so you know. I even saw the Indian movie at the Midget, who was an ass-kicking shaft. It was amazing.
Yeah, I think I'll skip it. I've seen a lot of Bollywood knockoffs, and none of them have... Not that there aren't great Bollywood movies, but the knockoffs are never really... I was in a Bollywood movie once, and some of them are not very well made.
You were in a Bollywood movie? Did you dance?
No, I did voiceover work in a movie called Apkasur, the movie, The Real Love Story. Two of those words are spelled wrong in the title.
Wow. Was your character a dancing character? Because there's got to be dancing in your movie.
Oh, there's a lot of dancing in it, but I played a police officer who said, "What the hell," for 3 minutes because there was no script. And I asked them, "What's the script?" And they said, "The line is, what the hell?" And I said, "Okay, stalks for 3 minutes." And they said, "Yeah, just say that." So I just did it to show them what a bad idea it was. And then they're like, "Yeah, great, print it. It's in the movie."
That's perfect. That's one of those have to be there to experience it type things. That's amazing, bro. I'm just going to give it up on that one. You've got a lot of those in your background.
If there's anyone else out there, I was probably the last one who has not seen this movie. Should they go find it?
Yeah, I think it's, I probably wouldn't found it unless it was a homework assignment, but it was a damn good and pleasantly surprising homework. Unlike The Cemetery Man, which to this point has now become a counseling session, this was a pleasantly surprising movie.
And yeah, I love Korean movies, and I hope people see more of them. Like I said, I think Old Boy is a great movie. It's far from the best Korean movie. So if you like it, I hope people check out a lot more. You said you're not a big fan of subtitles, but there's Korean director Bong Joon-ho, after he won the Oscar, he had the quote, "Once you overcome the 1-inch-tall barrier of subtitles, you've introduced so many more amazing films." And there, especially that like 2000-2010 era in Korea, there was this period where like the film industry had gotten to a point where they could make big films, but there were no like genre conventions yet. So people were able to experiment and do interesting things. And there's so many movies made during that period that are just fascinating. Old Boy is definitely one of them. Check as many of them as you out as you can. It was really from 2000-2010, because at 2010 is when Hollywood started to notice all of these directors doing interesting things and tried to import them all into America. And then they were in production hell for like a decade trying to make things that Hollywood's like, oh yeah, but make it just like you, but don't make it weird, and kind of ruined the Korean film industry for a decade. And then now Korea's starting to come back. But that sweet spot. Find as many great films as you can from that time and check them out.
Yeah, and you've given us some other ones to add to our list. So they're now on the big master list. I think it was like 10 of them you gave me.
If you want to see another great movie by Bak Chan-wook, check out JSA. That's my favorite.
I keep hearing about that one too. I got to check that one out. For me, I think people should, if lay back up on that. First off, I don't think it's pleasant, Fergal. I got to say that. The word, you could use the word pleasant in this movie. They do not go together. Should people watch this movie? I'd say probably if you want an experience, it's an experience. The ending will disturb you. And if it doesn't, I don't want to know you. Because it's that this movie is just disturbing. It's an enjoyable movie. And it's got in the hallway scene. Everyone talks about it for a good reason. Don't go into this movie thinking it's going to be the next John Wick movie. It's not a John Wick movie. It's average, fat, schlubby guy who's been in prison for 15 years seeking vengeance that he probably should not be going after.
Well, I think the first 10 years of the movie, he was pretty flabby. But when he was in that, when he was coming out, and I think I got to see him shirtless once or twice, he wasn't super muscular, but I think they had portrayed that he had lost a bunch of weight for this movie to portray a guy who's been in a place like that for as long as he has. He method acted the shit out of this.
And so if you did enjoy the filmmaking but found it too dark, that movie I mentioned, JSA, is, so it's a murder mystery where the twist, instead of being the most disturbing thing you've ever seen, is the most adorable thing you've ever seen. If you need a break from Old Boy, go to JSA. Violent things happen, but it's so cute.
Every time you say JSA, I think Justice Society of America.
I was just going to say the same thing.
Joint Security Area.
At least I know that like minds think alike, Chris. I know that.
I will have to check it out, though. Thumbs up, thumbs down. How would you rate this movie?
I would give this a brutal thumbs up with a hammer backed up on somebody's tooth with a smile in my face.
Oh, you've beaten it to me. I was getting out my hammer just so I could have the thumbs up while holding the hammer.
This is perfect right here.
For our audio medium, Ryan actually got out a toolkit, grabbed the hammer, and raised it. So that should tell you something. I'd say I give it like a 3/4 thumbs up. The ending did disturb me, so I probably won't be watching this movie anytime soon again. It's not a bad... Don't let that stop you from watching the movie. Don't let my disgust of the ending stop you from watching it. That should not be your deciding factor.
I actually don't think that'll be a huge problem, Chris.
So before we move on, though, I do have a mailbag for us, Fergal. I'd love to get your reaction on it.
Oh, man.
It's a rating. A great pod from three connoisseurs of the comic world. They revisit the best, the worst, and everything in between. It's not just superheroes, graphic novels, and manga-inspired cinema as well. 5 stars.
5 stars. That is amazing. Well, thank you, whoever that is. We would like to put you on payroll.
And it is 5 stars out of 5, just so we're clear.
That's perfect.
So before we head on out, Ryan, where can people find you?
Go to ryanestrada.com. You'll find thousands of pages of free comics, information about all my books. I wrote, if you like stories about Korea, I've written several books about my wife's experiences being hunted down by the cops, reading banned books in the 80s. Banned Book Club, my new one, No Rules Tonight, and lots more comics where that came from.
Your website's got a ton of free stuff on it, and I think it also talks about you worked with Garfield and Popeye and a few other ones out there too. So
Star Trek, yeah.
So take a look at all of them. Fergal, where can people find you?
Finding this guy's books. I did see a couple of his stuff. He's got some interesting stories, and a lot of it's just all truth-based stories, which is amazing. No, we're hunting down great comic finds, talking to folks, putting out material up on GothamKnight.com, and we're still just working our way back towards reopening our store, which we hope to do within the next year or two.
And for me, you can always find me at Off Panel Creations. We're always building some piece of nerdy furniture. I want to thank you for listening, to spending some time with us. If you have thoughts about Old Boy and how me, I just don't get it, so send us a note over at movie-smash.com, and we'll see you in a couple weeks. Thank you again for listening, and I hope you enjoy the show. This has been Movie Smash with Chris Roberts, Jeremy Parmentier, and Fergal Amayo, produced by me, Chris Roberts, executive produced by Off Panel Creations, LLC. Movie clips provided by the respective studios. You can rate and review the show at Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You might even find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for us? Visit us at movie-smash.com and send us a note. It too can be read on a future episode. If you haven't already, please subscribe to Movie Smash wherever you listen to your podcasts.
It's a little much. I'm not gonna lie. It's a little much.